Indraha King Indra Vritravakshaha The words of Vritrasura Shrutva Hearing Vata Alikam Without duplicity Apujayat Worshipped Grihita Vajraha Taking up the thunderbolt Prahasan Smiling Tam Unto Vritrasura Aha said Gata Vismayaha giving up his wonder. So translation, Shukadeva Goswami said, hearing the straightforward instructive words of Vritrasura, King Indra praised him and again took the thunderbolt in his hand. Without bewilderment or duplicity, he then smiled and spoke to Vritrasura as follows. So purport by his divine grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. King Indra, the greatest of the demigods, was astonished to hear the instructions of Vritrasura, who was supposed to be a demon. He was struck with wonder that a demon could speak so intelligently. Then he remembered great devotees like Prahlad Maharaj and Bali Maharaj, who had been born in the families of demons. And thus he came to his senses. Even so-called demons sometimes have exalted devotion for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, Indra smiled reassuringly at Vritrasura. So Sri Shukovacha, Indra Vritra Vacha Sutva Gatali Kam Apujayat Grihita Vajra Prahasangs Tang Aha Gata Vismayaha. So Omagana Timurandasha Gananjana Shilakaya Chakshur Miditam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So one of the reasons why in the Bhagavatam we have Vritrasura speaking this elevated philosophy and actually realization, not only philosophy, there's jnana and vijnana, is to teach us that devotional service has nothing to do with the body. And this is a very important lesson, although sometimes according to the caste system, people think that spiritual life has everything to do with the body, right? If someone's a Brahmin, then they're spiritual. Someone's a Shudra, they're not spiritual. And sometimes, I mean, even the Mahabharata, there's one version of the Mahabharata that mentions this story about the worm, which we've told many times before. That once upon a time, there was a worm, and the worm was crossing the road. I'll tell it very quickly. And Srila Vyasadeva asked the worm why he was going so close, so fast across the road. And the worm said, because there's a cart coming. And Vyasadeva said, well, if you stay in the road, you'll be run over. And the next life, you'll take birth as a higher entity. And the higher entity, after many, many births and deaths, you'll be a Shudra. And then as a Kshatriya, as a Vaishya, you'll take initiation from me, because Vaishyas are Dvija, or twice born. And then as a Kshatriya, you'll take initiation from me. And as a Brahmin, you'll take initiation from me. And finally, after many, many births, you'll go back to Godhead. So this is the general conception. Whether that story is there in the original Mahabharata or not is another question. Because Sripad Madhvacharya said the Mahabharata has been changed dramatically. So we don't cite the stories in the Mahabharata with the same authenticity that we would cite the stories in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Remember that. Because we have this principle of disciplic succession. Evam parampara praptam imam raja sheho vidahu. That this knowledge has been passed through the parampara. But when the parampara becomes broken, then the knowledge becomes, let's say, contaminated or mixed or broken or whatever expression you may use. In other words, you can't trust it 100%, isn't it? Just like if someone who is not following the regulative principles preaches Krishna consciousness, you know, I'll take it with, as they say, with a grain of salt. You heard of that expression before? You have that expression, do you? No. Grain of salt means you won't take it so seriously. You say, well, maybe not, if they're not following the parampara. So this principle of parampara is very important. So therefore, the books, the literatures that have been passed down and commented on by our parampara, which is the Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya, we take as absolute. And other literatures, you know, you have all these Puranas and everything like that to tell all these stories. Maybe it's true, maybe it's not, because there's been changes. The Mahabharata, as we mentioned many times before, has like 85 different editions of the Mahabharata, according to what part of India you're from. And many years, in the 1800s, scholars tried to put together something called the critical edition of the Mahabharata. Critical means they tried to understand what was the original by linguistic analysis. You know what linguistic analysis is? Let me describe what it is. It's analyzing the structure of the language. Just like I can tell what country you're from by what accent you have. Like people in India, if you start speaking your Hindi to them, they know you're from Fiji. They know you're not from India. Because every other word is English or Fijian. It's like I was speaking to Sanatana and I said, do you know the numbers in Hindi? No. I said, how do you do business? And he says, well, I just mix my English with my Hindi. So there, it's true. It's true. I said, but you were brought up in a nice Hindi-speaking family. He says, even my father doesn't know all the numbers. So the point is, you can really tell, even in the United States, I can tell where someone is coming from by how they speak. Because of different accents and even different words that people use. And what to speak of, let's say the language of Spanish, which I speak. If you speak the Spanish that they speak in Mexico and you go to Spain, basically sometimes people won't even understand you because there's different words. So in this way, unless you have an unbroken chain of disciplic succession, things get changed. Anyway, getting back to the story. So that's the story in the Mahabharata that I tell sometimes. That one has to go through all these different... And the Brahmins love that story. Why do the Brahmins love that story? Because that shows their superiority. That if you really want to be a devotee, you have to wait until you become a Brahmin. You understand? And then just wait. Wait, you guys, you know. Right now, you should just serve me. It establishes the superiority of a particular caste, you know, the caste system. And that, the Brahmins did that because they wanted basically to make money. I mean, that's, what did they say? Money is the root of all evil? You heard about that before? Because basically, if you can establish a caste and it's exclusive, then according to the law of supply and demand, you'll be able to charge more and you'll have more customers. I mean, if everybody's a Brahmin and I go say, I'm going to do some puja for you, you'll say, no, I have a friend who can do that. But if I'm the only one in the whole village, wow. Then whatever you want to do, even if you want to die, you have to call me. Right? It's like a doctor, for example. If there's very few doctors in Fiji, then everyone will go to Rupa Nuga. But if you have a doctor in every corner, then he's going to have to become a better doctor even. Right? He's already a good doctor. We're not criticizing. He's already a good doctor. But if you have competition, you have to do better. So, therefore, the Brahmin has established this caste system, and a lot of the injunctions in the Vedic literatures that have been changed are there because the Brahmanas wanted to establish the caste system. And in India, there were many revolts against this caste system. One example is the Buddhists. Actually, it's interesting, the revolts that you had against the caste system, both the prominent ones were in the state of Bihar. Did you know that? You didn't know that? There was in Gaya. You've heard of Gaya before? That's where Buddha appeared. This Bodh Gaya. You've heard of that, right? Also, it's interesting, in Gaya, you have the imprint of Lord Krishna's lotus feet, or Lord Vishnu's lotus feet. That's where Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went to take initiation. He met Ishwara Puri there, his spiritual master. So it's very interesting, you have this reform movements, even Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taking initiation in Bihar. So those of you who have families from Bihar should be very proud. And those of you from other states, well, just lament. I'm going to see you. So, Lord Chaitanya appeared in Bengal and he took initiation in Bihar. So, in any case, so the Gaya, in Gaya you had the Buddhists started, and that was a revolt against the Brahminical exclusivity, caste consciousness, and also, you know, a revolt against what the Brahmanas were doing. They were killing animals so that people could eat meat. I mean, the Brahmanas had become so pecuniary. Oh, sorry, that's a big word. The Brahmanas had become so much interested in money, they even started, for all intents and purposes, opening up a slaughterhouse. You know, like even today in India, you see Kali slaughterhouse, or there's this word or that word, slaughterhouse. So the Brahmanas, you know, if you wanted to buy meat, you go to the Brahmanas and they'd offer a goat to the goddess Kali. And if you didn't do that, you couldn't eat meat. So the Brahmanas even became meat sellers. Can you imagine that? What's supposed to be the highest caste, in order to make money, they became butchers. And also, you see the same thing happening in the Christian religion. In Jerusalem, where the Jewish people were, they were offering lambs in sacrifice. Not goats. Lambs are different. Lambs are the ones that have wool on them, and you can make nice coats and everything. So, and then Jesus Christ got upset and he stopped it all. So you see similar things occurring in different parts of the world. Because there were money changers in the city of Jerusalem. It was even more, let's say, obvious what they were doing. They were selling goats right outside the temple. It's amazing. Not goats, I mean sheep. Sorry. So, goats are for India. Sheep are for the Middle East. So lambs. Little lambs. You know that song, Mary Had a Little Lamb? No, you don't know the song. Anyway, so they were selling lambs so they could kill them and then eat them later on. Offer them in sacrifice. All that is a perverted reflection of the original Vedic sacrifices, of course, where you had the Ashvamedha, the horse sacrifice, and the Gomedha, which is the cow sacrifice. So anyway, get back to India. So the Buddhists revolted against that. Prabhupada said to stop the animal killing. Why were they killing animals? To make money. You can understand practically anyone's motivation if you analyze the money in Kali Yuga, right? I mean, it's really interesting. Money really motivates. Because basically, Kalo Shudra Sambhavat, everybody's Shudra in Kali Yuga, and that means they're interested in money for sense enjoyment. And they're not Vaishyas, they're Shudras, but they're interested in money so they can enjoy whatever, intoxication, meat eating, the latest electronic gadgets. Like I mentioned the other day, the Shudras line up whenever there's a new electronic gadget for days at the store, and they end up killing each other, rioting, the police have to come. Isn't it, Vrindavan, you read about that? You know, the iPhone, latest iPhone 5C, and the Shudras are all there, I gotta have it. They're not willing to wait even 1 week for the stupid thing. Can you imagine? I mean, just wait a week. But I gotta have it now. You know, a Vaishya is thinking of the future. You know, make an investment, make some money in the future. But a Shudra is just thinking now. Gotta have it now. Gotta eat it now. Gotta enjoy it now. Right? That's a Shudra. So the Brahmanas took the activity of mlechas in killing animals. Can you imagine that? They had lost their caste. I mean, they always talk about losing your caste. Well, if a Brahmin starts selling meat, he's definitely lost his caste. And so then there was the Brahminic, there was the revolt, which is the Buddhist. And also in Gaya you had the Jains. And the Jains were extremely nonviolent. I mean, they really revolted against the Brahmins even more than the Buddhists did, because the Jains, they would be so nonviolent. Even today, they wear the masks on their face because they're afraid of killing a bug, a microbe or a bug. They don't want a bug to come in. Of course, that's a little impractical, and they don't even eat root vegetables. You know that? Because the root vegetables, they're killing the root vegetables. They'll only eat the vegetables they can cut from the top, where you don't kill the plant. So that's pretty radical. I mean, we also take potatoes, carrots, all these root vegetables you take. I'm hearing what cassava and so many other things, right? They come from the sweet potatoes. I mean, that's a little radical. But you could see their intention was to revolt against the butchers. The Brahmin butchers. That was their intention. So that's Kali Yuga. So therefore there's this whole conception, the Brahmins had this whole conception that in order to be a Brahmin, in order to be qualified spiritually, you had to have the proper birth. And so, Prabhupada, understanding the conceptions that people had in India about Brahmins, following in the footsteps of Lord Chaitanya and his associates, brought the Western devotees to India. And just like Indra here is described, Indra was surprised, you know, shocked basically, by hearing Vritrasura preach. And there, you know, you take it seriously. So Prabhupada, he brought the Vritrasuras from the West. Not exactly Vritrasuras, but you understand. The Mlechas and the Yavanas. Of course, now in India, people are copying Mlechas and Yavanas. Because of the media, the propaganda is you should become a Mlecha or Yavana. And the Westerners, there's practically more vegetarians in America than there are in India. I was reading the percentages. In America, there's 10% of the, over 10 to 12% of the people are vegetarians. Pretty good, isn't it? And in Fiji, what's the percent vegetarians amongst the Indians? It's probably 1, 2, 3%. Can you imagine? It's a reversal. It's amazing. I mean, I find it an amazing statistic. I was looking at that statistic on the internet the other day. What countries have the highest percentage of vegetarians? And the UK also has a very high percentage. It's like 12%. It's higher than America. In fact, you can go to the supermarket and you can see the foods are labeled good for vegetarians in the UK. Has anyone seen that? Anyone been to the UK? I have. And it actually labels vegetarians. In Europe, in one country, Slovenia, the president of the country was a vegetarian and he was preaching vegetarian to everybody, how they should become vegetarian. And he was so radical that he would only cook his own food. His name was Dinorshik. And actually I went to visit him and we had a wonderful time together. We were talking about, and he would go to the United Nations because he was representing this country, Slovenia, which is actually one of the European Union countries. And he would preach to them about vegetarianism. Can you imagine that? Someone from the West preaching about vegetarianism, and he was such a popular leader there. Unfortunately, he passed away about three, four years ago. And then also the president of Croatia. Anyway, there's many stories I can tell you about different leaders in Europe who are becoming vegetarian. And also in America, a previous president, Mr. Clinton, has become a vegan. And he's preaching about it on TV. But who's doing that in India? I mean, there's preachers, but where are the political leaders doing that? Right? Is Mr. Singh doing that? I have not heard him do that. And probably he eats meat too. So you see, it's sort of a reversal there. So anyway, Prabhupada, in order to shock the people in India, and as he called it, his dancing white elephants, which you've heard before, because people in India are thinking, we know everything. Like Prabhupada said, people in India are not sleeping, they're pretending to be asleep. Just like when I go preaching in India and someone doesn't accept what I'm saying, they have this little smirk on their face. Like they know I'm right and they're just trying to be tricky. Isn't it? I mean, that's what I've experienced in India. They know, people in India know what you're saying is the truth, but they don't want to admit it because that means changing the lifestyle, right? That's a problem. So therefore, Prabhupada brought the Western people dancing, chanting, and the people in India were shocked. Wow. How is it these malechas? Even Prabhupada said one time Narada Muni came to a kirtan and he was shocked. Because the devotees asked, Prabhupada said Narada Muni came to the kirtan. And the devotees asked Prabhupada, what was he doing? Prabhupada said, laughing. Rolling with laughter to see the malechas dancing and chanting. Even Narada Muni, who knows everything, was laughing. So Prabhupada brought the Westerners in, and therefore, because he established the credibility, the authenticity of Krishna, this is really what happened. This is really establishes Krishna consciousness as authentic. When you have people who are not brought up in a particular culture, following that culture. Because people can't claim that you're doing what you're doing because your parents taught you that. Right? I mean, just like I was brought up in a particular Western religion, and I follow the religion of my parents. My parents insisted that I go to Sunday school and chant Hare Krishna every day. No, they didn't insist. I wish they did. Worship the deity. No. No, they insisted I do whatever was in the religion I was born in. So it's not astonishing. It's just like, that's the way it is. But when someone from a different culture, a different religion, a different country, who's never heard about Krishna becomes Krishna conscious, that means it's real. Right? Why would Western people who had no knowledge about Krishna start chanting, worshiping the deity, wearing bed sheets, shaving their most important aspect of their body, their hair off? Because in the Bhagavatam it says, in Kali Yuga, people's beauty will be ascertained by their hair. So men will really have nice hair, and they'll rub coconut oil in it and sandalwood oil. I'm not going to look at anybody. I have to be careful. People will say, why are you making fun of me in class? So then we'll... Even before I joined the movement, I would sometimes go with my male friends to the beauty parlor where the men would have their hair put up in curlers. So this is... It's amazing, isn't it? It's amazing. Even there, one of the most famous plays was based on hair. It's called Hair. So why would people give all that up? Simply because it's Krishna consciousness is transcendental. That's the real point. Krishna consciousness is transcendental. Therefore, you have someone like me, who's not born in any culture, becoming a guru. I mean, that's amazing. It is amazing. It's shocking. And then you have people who are born in India, in Indian culture, being materialistic. That is amazing, too. I mean, it's your culture. It's your responsibility. So Lord Chaitanya also employed the same technique that Prabhupada employed. He had Haridas Thakur be the Namacharya. I mean, Haridas Thakur was born in a Muslim family. I mean, that's shocking for people. And he had Advaita Acharya was offering the shuddha plate to Haridas Thakur. And that's amazing. I mean, you all know what the shuddha plate is? No. Shrud, you call it shrud. But in Sanskrit, we call it shuddha. So that means there's the plate. You're supposed to offer the remnants to the best of the Brahmins. So normally you call, well, Mr. Sharma, right? Or Mr. Trivedi. Or what's another name? Maharaj. There's a doctor. No, normally you call, you know, find out this mobile number of Mr. Sharma and say, Mr. Sharma, you know, can you eat the prasadam? And he said, yes, I'm coming right now. And please give me some money. That will be a $200 charge to eat your prasadam. So, it's like I have one disciple in Nandi, his name is Bhagawan. Bhagawan Sai Baba, no, Bhagawan. And whenever it's Pitapak or Devapak, he's fully engaged, more than our pujaris here. It's like we were talking last night, how there's too much stress on the pujaris here. So he has 4 weeks of stress. And the rest of the life is vacation time. So Lord Chaitanya arranged for Advaita Acharya, when it was time to perform the shut-up ceremony. He had fed Haridas Thakur, and Haridas Thakur said, you know, what are you doing? You know, I'm a lecher, whatever. And then Advaita Acharya said, you're the best of the Brahmins. And they quoted a verse. Aho bhattasvak pachakto garyan yaji vagre vartate namatubhyam te pustu pustu huvar shashnur arya brahmanuchar nama granati yate. And this is a wonderful verse from the Vedic literatures. It says, it is amazing. Ho bhata. Ho means it's amazing in Sanskrit. Ho bhata ta pacha ho swa pacha to garyan. That the people who are eating, you know, whatever, dogs. How amazing that people who were eating dogs, born in a lower class family. Jaji Vagri Vartate Nam, they're chanting Krishna's names. And by doing that, that it's understood that they've actually performed all the preliminary rituals, all the austerities, and they become Aryans. That Aryan means higher class people. It doesn't mean, like Hitler misused that word Aryan in World War II, indicating, you know, what he thought was the master race. People who had blonde hair and blue eyes. Of course, Hitler didn't have blonde hair and blue eyes. And he didn't look like an Aryan. Anyway, so Aryan means like someone who knows the higher value of life. Prabhupada translates it like that in the Bhagavad Gita. So they've automatically become high-class people. And Brahmanuchar Nama, Granthiyate, it's understood they've actually become better than Brahmins or the topmost Brahmins. So, that's actually the point. Of course, here's a downside to that. Devotees may think, well, therefore, because I'm a devotee, I'm the topmost Brahmin. And I don't have to serve Krishna anymore. We were talking about this last night in our discussion, like, why so many devotees, or people who are initiated, let's not use the word devotee, people who are initiated, first of all, they don't come to the temple to serve. And secondly, when they do come, they expect to be served, right? They have this sense of empowerment. You know, I am a devotee, and I couldn't be prouder. And if you don't like it, I'm going to chant a little louder. Right? I'm a Vaishnava. Don't offend me. Look at my Brahmin thread. This is so low class to be proud of your position. What do they say? The pauper is proud of his penny. So we pull out our Brahmin thread. I mean, it's just such a low class thing to think you're better than other people, to think you know everything, and to think you don't have to, you're coming to the temple, I'm a devotee, the temple devotees are supposed to serve me. Nonsense. You come to the temple, you serve. You help serve prasadam, you help cook the feast, you help do the deity worship. We're servants. And if you think you become master, you're an ass or a cow. If you come to the temple and you don't render service or don't want to render service, then it's like going to a holy place, according to the Bhagavatam, just to take a bath. Right? The Bhagavatam talks about that. Yatirtha buddhi shalile nakari chit yameshu abhigeshu saeva gokara. Gokara means an ass or a cow. So, why is this that people do that? Because they, this false pride, thinking I know everything, I'm a devotee, I'm chanting Hare Krishna. And you even treat non-devotees badly. You think I'm a devotee. And you look at everybody else as a demon. Well, if you look at everybody else as a demon, you're a demon. Even if you're chanting Hare Krishna. A real devotee sees everyone as part and parcel of Krishna and everyone as aspiring devotee, one way or the other. Not as demon. So we have this false pride. It's a problem. A little bit of knowledge is a dangerous thing. Right? That's another statement. We get a little knowledge, we think we know we're not the body. It's all true. And then we just become proud. Angry, violent. And of course, Lord Kapiladev describes that's devotional service in the mode of ignorance. So when we come to the temple, we should think, how can I serve? Like Prabhupada said, the only thing he asks his guru is, how can I serve you? Not, guru, what can you do for me? Give me some blessings so I can be successful in business. I mean, how many times do people ask me, how can I serve you? They always say, blessings, Maharaj. So it's a one-way street. It's a bad business for me. So, sometimes I'm thinking that maybe I should be like Tamal Krishna Maharaj, who just like says, do this or... Sometimes, even though it's not my nature. Because nobody asks, how can I serve? Not nobody, sometimes people ask. But it's usually, oh Maharaj, ashivat for my little son, ashivat for me, ashivat. You know, I just have to keep my hand, I'm developing carpal tunnel syndrome right now in my blessing hand. You just have to keep the hand frozen like that. But nobody says, how can I serve you? What can I do? Because they're afraid of what I would say. They'll say, if I start speaking what I want them to do, they say, Maharaj, it's time for the next program. We'll take you somewhere else. So anyway, that's the point. People should come to the temple. Anybody, you're initiated and uninitiated, we're servants. We're still servants. You're sannyasi, you're still a servant. It's like many times I'm here, I serve the Sunday feast and I enjoy it. It's more enjoyable to serve than to be served. You really want to be happy. It's not simply you have to do it. That's the way you become happy. By rendering service. You know, cooking for the deities and serving the Sunday feast, whatever, whenever you come. Cleaning the floor. Oh, we chant every morning, Shri Vigraha Dhanana Nityananda Shingara Tan Mandira Marjanadu. That the spiritual masters engage along with his disciples in cleansing the temple. I mean, it's a benediction. People should be happy to cleanse the temple. Oh, please let me do it. We should be fighting for the broom. Not fighting with the broom. With brooms. That's for witches. We should be fighting, let me do it, let me clean the floor of the temple. Can I do it? That's devotee. That's devotee. And that's really the point. So one shouldn't be satisfied that they have some spiritual name. It's the same thing as the Brahmin satisfied that they have the name Sharma. It's the same problem there, right? We should show the devotional qualities. Chatur Varna Mayashristam Guna Karma Vibhagasha. As Krishna says in the Gita, one is known to be Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra according to the qualities that one exhibits. Okay. So, any questions or comments? Actually, it's time to greet the deities. Yeah. Yeah, nobody's a born Brahmin. Yeah. No, it's a big illusion. Kalo Shudra Sambhavat. Everybody born in Kali Yuga is a Shudra. And samskarava vet vijyam. So, but we have to be careful of thinking because we have a spiritual birth, we're Brahmins. That was the point I was making. Just because I have a spiritual name, or even second initiation, doesn't mean I'm a Brahmin. It means I have a thread, which is like, as Prabhupada said, two pais. A pais is 1/100th of a rupee. A rupee is worth how much now in Fijian dollars? There's 30 rupees in a Fijian dollar. So it's worth 3 cents. Fijian. So 1/100th or 2/100ths of 3 cents. I mean, it's such a small number. And that's what your thread is worth. Doesn't prove anything. So you may have initiation, whatever. If you don't have the qualities, first of all, you're not a disciple unless you're disciplined. You're not, you know, people say all the time, I hear this, I'm Prabhupada's disciple, I'm Prabhupada's disciple. Well, you're not disciplined in working, doing things the way Prabhupada would want. How can you call yourself a disciple? Yes, you took initiation, but you're not a disciple until you're disciplined by the guru. That's the point. So you're not, you know, you're a Brahmin if you have brahminical qualities. That's it. And a brahminical quality or a spiritual quality is to be a servant of a servant of a servant to the Lord. Gopi Bharata Padakamala Dasa Dasa Anudasa. Okay, on that happy note, without belaboring the points, because I was, anyway, we were thinking about this last night. All glories to His divine grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada.